Right then, hello everyone, and welcome to another of our Physics at Work Q&A sessions. Hopefully you're well aware of what Physics at Work is now, and you've seen some of the excellent videos that our exhibitors have put together for you. I'm here today with Robin and Ingrid from Isaac Physics, who are going to chat to us about what sort of things they get up to, why perhaps you should spend your time doing some physics problems when you might prefer to do it, I don't know, sleeping or reading books, whatever it is that teenagers get up to nowadays. So to start us off, I'll just ask each of you for a little bit of an introduction. So if Robin, you'd like to tell us a little bit about yourself, what you do at Isaac Physics?
What do I do at Isaac Physics? That's a hard one. I run the mentoring scheme. So there are year 11, 12 and 13 mentoring schemes. So we run through problems. The problems are set each week, sort of roughly an hour's worth. So it depends how long you spend on the problems. So it would be an hour that you're meant to spend. There may be extra ones because you haven't covered that topic or whatever. And then I'll run through them once a week. To take you a fair way through, sometimes to the end, but quite often leave you tantalizingly close. and then I write some questions for Isaac Physics. That's the main thing. It's a sort of physics aspect of it. So I'll answer the tickets on the ticketing system if they're about physics questions. Because after a while you get to know some of the questions and the ones that get asked about more often. And my background is in school physics teaching, in fact. So I was in a classroom for many years and I now run the Physics Olympiad. So if you want more questions again, then you can do Physics Olympiad questions as well. I do lots of them.
Excellent. Well, thank you very much. And Ingrid, how about yourself?
Yes, so I'm the teacher support manager at Isaac Physics, and that's a role that I've just recently taken on. I started doing that in May. So students will come across me if they send a ticket in and I might reply to them. But mainly I'm dealing with teachers, so looking at organising events, which can be student events, supporting teachers with mentoring and helping them to navigate the Isaac Physics site. Before that, I'd been using Isaac for many, many years, very enthusiastically as a physics teacher and then head of physics and head of science, and also as a special needs coordinator. So I've been using Isaac for lots of different things, and it was just the absolute icing on the cake to be able to be part of the Isaac Physics team, because I'm really, really committed to it, and all of my students with all different interests and abilities have really got a lot out of Isaac. I mean, it's not the easiest thing you've ever done, but that's what makes it so satisfying.
Well, perhaps leading off from that a little bit, just for those that might not be aware in the audience, we're talking mainly to schools and their teachers, so students doing their GCSEs. What is Isaac Physics, and why should they be interested in it? Is it just sort of more physics homework, or is there a bit more to it than that? I think, Ingrid, you might be best placed to answer that one.
Okay, so Isaac Physics is basically an online platform where you can access physics questions, and you can do that yourself. You don't need to be referred to Isaac by your school teacher, so you can just go to isaacphysics.org. You can set up your own account. You are the data controller of your own account, and you can even access the questions and the resources without setting up an account. So you can do it anonymously. And it's about having a go at questions, because physics is a skill, and you there's no such thing as being rubbish at physics. Although we all say it, oh, this is too hard, I'm rubbish at this. Well, no, you're not. You just need a bit more practice, and if you've got the will to practice, you will get good at physics. So Isaac's a great way of doing that, because you can trust that the questions have been tried and tested and written by physicists and school teachers with a lot of experience, And it's absolutely evidence-based over several years now that if you do Isaac regularly, you will get better at physics, and you'll see that in your grades. And it's a brilliant preparation for your A-levels, for studying at degree level, and just for life in general. It's a brilliant resource.
Lovely, thank you very much. And so slightly leading off from what you said there, actually, are there skills that you develop when solving physics problems? Are they just going to be useful for your physics exams, or is there any sort of wider application for these skills? I don't know who wants to discuss that.
I can say a few words. I think what you seem to be doing is something very specific, so just a physics problem. But of course, what you're developing is those problem-solving skills, and you might think, oh, well, I'm learning a little more about electricity or something particular, but it's not. It's much more involved than that. You may actually be solving an electricity problem, but you're learning to persevere, to sort of try and understand what the problem's about, and those sort of the skills that are sort of not so easy pinned down, you're developing. Simple perseverance is really important in problem solving in every aspect of life, that you don't think this is a very difficult problem, I'm simply going to ask somebody else, but you actually try and sort out what the problem is yourself. And that's really important. The other aspect is being able to sort of understand what the problem is. So if you're willing to ask questions about it, it hones your understanding, and you realize that sometimes you've got a difficult problem, but it's not quite as difficult as you thought, because you sort of rather misunderstood it. And so I think one can say that those skills are very important, and you learn them through physics, and you can learn them in other subjects as well. But physics is particularly adept at this, because physics is about problem solving much more than doing the art subjects, where it's kind of harder to pin down what the actual technical problem is there. Physics, it's much more upfront.
Okay. Now, I've just had one question pop through, specifically for you, Robin. The question is, can I still join in the mentoring scheme that Mr. Hughes mentioned, even if I'm younger than year 11, and how would I join?
Yes, you can. We don't tend to get younger people, mainly because they may not have studied so many of the topics, but you can do. You're welcome to join. You simply go to Isaac Physics, the GCSE tab, and then you'll find the mentoring scheme there. And you click on that, it says Year 11 Mentoring Scheme. So it's a few clicks in, but it's quite easy to find. And you simply join, you click on the thing that says Join the Mentoring Scheme. And then by joining, you get the problems sent once a week by email. And they actually also go into your assignments on Isaac Physics, and you can do some of them. You don't have to do them all. There's a slight feeling that either sort of, if I join, I've got to do all the problems, but there is no real reason. That's just because it's a hangover from school homework, that if you're given the problems, you're expected to do them all, not a sort of small selection of them. But I would only expect you to do questions on topics you've covered, and I don't know what topics you have covered. If you haven't covered electricity, then I wouldn't expect you to do electricity questions. So I usually set sort of more than one topic, so that there are things you can do and things that you don't feel you must do as well. So join at any age. Year 13, I'm not sure you want to be joined the year 11 group. I think you just stick to your own, but you can do. I wouldn't know, and I'm not going to chuck you off.
Indeed. And so, is there a general approach to these physics problems that you're teaching through Isaac Physics, or is it a case that, you know, for every different physics problem, there's a slightly different way that you'd try and tackle it and break it down?
Well, in a sense, yes, because they're all different problems, but there are some features in common. And one is to understand what the problem is about. And it is very easy to get a slightly harder problem. And that differs from just a mere question, where a question is, the answer is yes, no, or 56.75 meters, or a single kind of thought, you know, just a quick one-step approach, maybe two steps. But a problem is more involved. A problem is maybe several steps using different concepts together, such that you have to get the material into your head. So it's written down on the paper. You kind of need it in your head to put things together. You can't just do it looking through the wrong end of a telescope and scanning around the question. It simply doesn't work. So what you have to do is get into your head somehow. And one way of doing that is by drawing a diagram. Even when it's sort of not a kind of mechanical problem where there's a mass on a slope held up by a piece of string and so on, you know, if it's it's a question on electricity or a very conceptual question, you want a diagram. Because you want to lay out the ideas such that there's a structure that can go into your mind and you've got that framework to pin the ideas on. Once it's in your head, it's much easier to solve. And sometimes, and you can try this out, you get a difficult problem, not an impossible one that you've kind of never covered the topic before, but a difficult one that makes you struggle. You think, I can't solve this. And if you think about it in the evening, and then sort of stop. Sometimes you, in the morning, you solve the problem. You know how it's done. And it's not like you've been dreaming about it in an obvious way overnight, but it's obviously been around your head. And it's very interesting when that happens, you kind of just somehow in the morning you get up and you can solve it because it's been working its way through your brain in some way. And in doing that, that means getting the problem in your head in the first place and not just reading the script and saying, oh, I've got all these words, but it's having a structure. And drawing the diagram is the key thing. Most physics problems of any significance require a diagram to illustrate the ideas, even if it's putting the labels together for something that's very conceptual. So the diagram is the key thing. After that, it's perseverance. Not giving up, but not sort of sitting there for hours saying, oh, I've solved this. You have to have a break. You have to refresh your mind. So that's probably the other main thing. But thirdly, of course, you actually have to know some physics. you can't get around, you have to sort of have an idea what Newton's laws are, the connection between current, voltage, electricity, maybe R equals D, things like that. You have to know some stuff, but you don't have to know sort of lots of really subtle ideas to solve some problems. They're not set up that way. They're not set up as tricks. They're set up as, so to develop your understanding of the ideas, to start making you link things together and make you show a bit of perseverance. That's crucial. Don't give up. I mean, work at it for a while. If you get stuck, then you can ask us a question. There's a contact us at the bottom of the page, and we're happy to answer. If we can know the answer, sometimes I have to think about the questions. So you don't get an instantaneous answer if it's a harder question, because you've got to work it out. But we're happy to interact.
Lovely. Well, you mentioned there a couple of sort of principles of physics, like Newton's laws, that our audience as sort of GCSE or International Baccalaureate students will be familiar with. Is the physics that they're learning at this point, is this something that's actually going to be useful in the future, or will they get to sort of A-level and degree and find that actually what they've been told was just a sort of simplified version that they'll never use again?
Well, sometimes you might say they can learn a simplified version. I mean, that is true. I mean, because you learn about Newton's laws in year 10, year 11, it depends when you do them. And you might say, well, we don't do them in a very mathematical way. That's true. But the same laws that you use at university. So if you look in research papers or higher level university physics, you just open the paper up and you say, oh, this is quite incomprehensible. But you'll find that there are terms within there that mention stuff you've done at school, like oscillations, which is a fancy term for things swinging about. And Newton's laws will appear if it's something relevant, or voltage, potential, resistors, They're all in there. They're all based on school physics. If you don't do school physics, it's not like, oh, well, I'll start at university and I'll just pick it up from there. I don't need to bother with that school physics. No, if you start at university, you'd have to do a foundation course learning several years of school physics because you can't do without it. It's essential. It's the foundations. If you try and build something without foundations, it simply falls over. It doesn't go anywhere because it's not structurally sound. It's the same with physics. It's very hierarchical, as one might say. It's built from the ground up. Okay, you can speed things up. You can kind of take some shortcuts. So you can do things without learning about old-fashioned sound or too much on heat and things like that. But I mean, the basic stuff, electricity, mechanics or dynamics, things like that, they're fundamental and they proliferate so that the ideas you develop there extend elsewhere. So the structure, even if not the same words, appear elsewhere. So you find proportionality, conserved quantities, like in energy. You often say, oh, energy is conserved. Well, okay, it's a bit of a vague use of the phrase, but you find other things that you've never heard of are conserved. Lepton number is conserved. You think, oh, what's lepton number? You don't know what lepton number is, but it's something that's conserved. And so all those fundamental ideas are what you use later in a different context. So school physics is absolutely vital, and it's good to have that solid grounding. And that's what Isaac Physics does to you, is it encourages you to practice without feeling someone's looking over your shoulder, seeing, ooh, have you got that one right? You can kind of try it yourself 10 times and eventually get it right. You think, why didn't I get it right earlier? And a lot of it's practice and clarity of thinking, so that you kind of pin down your thoughts. Why am I getting this wrong? You know, not have I got the right answer yet? And that's it, put it away. Why have I got it wrong? How was I thinking incorrectly about it? And you find, I misread this word, I misinterpreted this statement. So it said the thing is slowing down, but it doesn't stop. It slowed down to a slow speed, things like that, which you kind of just miss. It's excellent practice for being going into the law, actually. It's because it requires very precise reading. Yeah. So I've had students that go off to be lawyers. It doesn't interest me whatsoever, but they're interested in that kind of thing. And actually, it's a really good training for that because you have to be very careful about reading things precisely. If you read it imprecisely, you can't do the question because it doesn't make sense.
Thanks, sir.
Quick point there. I think it's really important to differentiate between having a misconception where you've been taught something incorrect about something and having a simplified explanation that makes sense to you based on where you're at in terms of your knowledge of other subjects and your general level of development, because with physics it's really important for you to actually understand and for things to make sense to you, and an explanation about something, maybe forces, that makes sense to you at GCSE won't necessarily be the same explanation at A level or beyond. But you won't be wrong about what you are understanding or expressing. You're just going to build on that. So I think sometimes people get a bit hung up about being taught incorrectly and having to relearn that. But it's certainly not the case in what happens at school. You're just getting something that you can make sense of, and as your understanding increases, then you just build on that.
That's good to hear. And I think, certainly from my experience, physics was one of those subjects in which even if you did learn a sort of simplified version, it's just a case that, it's valid so long as things aren't going too close to the speed of light or that sort of thing. It's not that it's wrong, it's that it's right in specific circumstances. And that certainly appealed to me. I don't know about others. So related to that, Ingrid, what's the most sort of common misconceptions about physics you see in sort of 14 to 16 year olds, both in your time at teaching and at Isaac Physics?
Well, I could answer that question on different levels. And I'd say that the most fundamental misconception is that if you can't see the answer straight away, it means you must be stupid or no good at physics. So therefore, the conclusion is, you know, give up because you're not going to do well. And all sorts of different students feel like this for various different reasons. And the bottom line is, if you can see the answer straight away, that question is probably a little bit too easy for you and it's not challenging you. And if you do have to think about it and work it out, then that's where you're going to grow and get better at physics. And as I said before, it's a skill. So practice, you will get better. And if you're thinking about things in terms of getting your exam grades, not necessarily in terms of whether doing physics is going to make you a better person, the grade that you get out at the end has got absolutely nothing to do with where you started off at the beginning. So if you're starting your GCSE course and you're thinking, well, haven't done very much of this before, or I'm not really sure about it, didn't get on with my teacher, whatever, it doesn't matter. It's where you're going to get at the end of those 2 years. And that is absolutely something that you can do something about. And we can support you with that. In terms of specific things, I was doing some teacher mentoring yesterday evening. And we were talking about how people have misconceptions when they're thinking about terminal velocity. So for example, if you've got someone falling out of an aeroplane and then they suddenly put the parachute up, because you've got the weight of the person acting downwards, and then as soon as they put the parachute up, there's this huge drag force upwards. And a lot of people say, oh, well, then the parachutist is going to start moving upwards because that's where the resultant force is. And then you have to think about vectors and scalars, and you have to think about, well, what's happening when you're already moving in a certain direction, and it opens the conversation. So yes, there are lots of misconceptions that students have, but misconceptions are part of your journey to learning and talking about it and collaborating, and not thinking that making a mistake or being stuck or having to take time to think about things means that you're no good at physics and people are going to laugh at you. That should never happen. Ask those questions, then you get better at answering questions, and you also get better at asking questions.
Oh, lovely, thank you. I know certainly from the stuff that we do in the Cavendish in our outreach events, some of the most interesting questions I've had from students are ones where they've slightly misunderstood something or a little bit of misinterpretation, and they're just looking to clarify it and to get a better understanding. And it's it makes you think about how things can be seen from different angles and all that. Indeed. Now then, oh, we've got a question from the Lees in Cambridge. They're asking, how long did it take to develop the code for Isaac Physics, and how many people worked on it? Now, you got any idea of that, or?
Isaac Physics has been around for quite a number of years. It was developed over a couple of years just to get it started and get some finance and up and running. So I can't remember the numbers now. It really got going in about 2014, but I was looking at an email earlier from 2012 where we're discussing about having some other aspects to it. So there's a lot of earlier thought that went into saying, here's how the platform will be. So the initial talks were with about half a dozen people, I suppose, and it's built up. So we had a few years back, 4 years ago, we had probably about 20 people involved in Isaac Physics. So a lot of the people are on the computing side, because to run a platform requires maintenance, developing things that you want. So you say, I'd like to be able to put the questions in this sort of format and change the page to look like this. And that's very much a sort of an IT kind of thing. And unless you sort of are practiced in doing those, it's kind of quite hard to get it right. and not have the platform falling over. So there's quite a few IT people involved it, and half IT, half physicists. The sort of the physics side tend to sort of say what they'd like the platform to be able to do, and to which the IT people say, well, I'm not sure about that. I mean, I'm sure they're trying to be helpful, but they're unwilling to accept everything we'd like. So it's been running for about 6 years or so, and it's got, I can't remember what the numbers are like offhand, it's had 50 million problems solved. You know, it's got, I can't remember, is it 20,000 teachers? 100 or 200,000 students. Actually, I think it's much more than that, because students join and then they go off to university, so they kind of move on. So it's like having a school textbook where you see that various people have owned it before you. So it gets a good use. Is that okay? I mean, developing the code's that doesn't stop. Okay, it probably took a year or two to get Isaac into a sort of a proper running state, but it's been developed a lot since. And there was a new platform change. The servers have to, they kind of expire, essentially. So we had a new platform started a couple of months back, which has caused all sorts of problems. So you still find questions appear, and the layout's all gone funny, and you have to fix it. it's like a car. It just requires maintenance. It's like an old car. It requires maintenance. It'll never stop.
Is there an Isaac physics equivalent for any other subject? If anyone foolishly is interested in anything other than physics, is there other options?
Yes, there are. As a separate site, there is Isaac Computer Science. That started up a year or two back, and it's been developed. And computer science is certainly extremely important, not only for running Isaac Physics behind the scenes, but there are real careers in computer science. You can't read a newspaper without all sorts of articles about essentially computer science. Facebook, TikTok. Who runs these things? Well, there are people at the top end who kind of thought of the idea and marketed it. But quite often, they're not computer scientists. The large group of people behind the scenes running the thing, well or badly, depending on your point of view, are computer scientists. And they will do all the technical aspects, and they'll move into a managerial role of saying more about the overall design and things like that. So it's very important. On Isaac itself, we have chemistry, and you can find lots of chemistry there. It tends to be A-level chemistry because it's more numerical. So that's the sort of thing that Isaac is able to answer. It can't really answer text questions. And there's a lot of maths there, and maths is very important. So we have lots and lots of A-level maths. And we actually have a maths book which takes you through the sorts of maths that physicists want, rather than just maths for its own sake, for its own fun. We want maths particularly as a sort of a set of tools for physics, though you mustn't use that term with mathematicians because they don't like it. Well, that's how physicists often view it. Physics does not require you to be a superlative mathematician. If you're a superlative mathematician, do maths. But if you're a very good mathematician, competent at least, and not frightened of the maths, then physics is certainly an option, because we want to, physics and maths are not the same. People often regard them as the same. So if you're good at maths, you can do physics. It's not true. There's a lot of overlap, but physics is different. Physics requires words and ideas, and it's not maths. Though it is a mathematical subject, and you don't want to be frightened of maths. You want to be able to feel, I can do the sort of straightforward maths that I get taught in school, and that will suffice for physics. You can be an extremely good physicist without being a high-flying mathematician.
Indeed, and there's the famous quote from Feynman about the relationship between maths and physics that I'll leave people to look up themselves if they'd like. Now, just to finish us off, we've got in your video a few examples of interesting sort of phenomenon that have either elegant or simple physics solutions, as the levitating table, the mold effect of the chain coming out of the bowl, and the Magnus effect. Now, I was wondering if either of you had any other examples of sort of strange phenomena like that that might seem sort of counterintuitive, maybe even paradoxical, but actually, once you break it down, look at it as a physicist, it's got quite a nice, simple solution. So just as our last question, either of you have any examples of that?
Well, we were discussing this earlier, actually, and there were a couple of things that we were thinking of. But one thing which I think is lovely is thinking about wave-particle duality and thinking about light. And that doesn't strictly come down to something that we can resolve and say, oh, physics has found all the answers for it. But there was this ongoing debate about is light a particle, which was Newton's theory of corpuscles, or should we think of light as a wave, which was something that had been developed by a Dutch physicist called Huygens. And because it has an interesting sociological aspect, because obviously Newton was so prominent and well thought of in scientific circles, it was assumed that his theory would be correct, and so his ideas were dominant for quite some time. But it took an experiment by someone called Thomas Young, called the double slit experiment, to show that light did actually have a wave like nature. And if anybody likes watching the Veritasium videos, there's a really, really nice one on the Young's double slit experiment showing people reacting and responding to looking at the results of the double slit experiment. So I would very much recommend that you have a look at that. So where we're at now, it depends on what phenomenon you're looking at, whether you should view light more usefully as a particle or a wave. And that's something that if you do A-level physics, you'll come across quite early on in your first year course. So that was something that we thought about.
Hmm. Anything to add to that, Robin? Or
well, that is a very interesting problem, because it's not something that one is ever going to be able to say, at last I see it. Sometimes we have to accept that nature behaves in this odd way, and it's remarkable that we can explain anything at all, really. Light being a particle and a wave, you think, well, what does it look like? There is nothing we can ever think of that will say, oh, it looks like this. It's beyond our imagination. And we can still do calculations, we can still make predictions as to what will happen. And that's the remarkable thing, that actually we are able to understand the inexplicable in a way. So I think that's the key thing. That we can actually interact with it and make sort of grasp it enough so we can actually say what will happen.
Lovely. Well, thank you very much for your time. We've got a little bit over. Hopefully our audience won't mind too much. If you happen to miss this, you can catch it on the website. I'll have it uploaded there so that people who weren't able to watch it live can view it back. Unfortunately, then you won't be able to ask questions directly to our interviewees today. But if you would like to ask them anything, you can find my contact details on the outreach page. And I'm sure if you go to Isaac Physics, you can find the contact details for Robin and Ingrid, who'd be more than happy to be pestered by interesting physics problems. And they're both vigorously nodding, which you can't see at the moment. So I think they'd very much like it if you were to pester them. So thank you very much for listening. If you've got any feedback, if you enjoyed what we're doing, if you can think of improvements, please have a look at our feedback page on the Physics at Work website. There's a long form questionnaire there that asks for lots of details. That's very important to us. It shapes how we do things in the future. It gives us a very good idea of whether what we're doing is actually having the effect we want it to do. So if you could please fill that out, we'd be very, very much appreciative. And with that, I shall let Robin and Ingrid go, and we'll see you later for a chat with the CEB Cambridge group. Okay, thanks, guys.
Thanks.